The other thing that often happens at diagnostic laboratories, especially with poultry, is there are new and emerging diseases that need diagnostic tests. And so I typically try to be before the curve that the disease hits to say, hey, this is coming. We need to get ready for it. Let's plan on it. Let's start doing it. So that's typically been my role in terms of the diagnostic tests.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an Ecolab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Doug Corver, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the poultry industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. If you find this episode interesting, please let us know by visiting our website at wisenetics.com. Our guest today is Dr. Mick Fulton, who is Professor Emeritus of Avian Diseases at Michigan State University. Dr. Fulton has almost 40 years of experience in poultry pathology and medicine and has served as a diagnostician, teacher, researcher, and poultry extension veterinarian at Michigan State. He has led training on response to catastrophic poultry diseases in developing countries around the world. Recognized for his excellence in teaching, Dr. Fulton received the 2018 and 2019 Faculty Member of the Year Award from the Midwest Poultry Consortium Center of Excellence and has also received numerous other awards. Welcome to the program, Mick.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here, Doctor. Well, I went through veterinary college and always wanted to do large animal. So unfortunately, the last year of my education, I had a poultry rotation with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Raleigh Winterfield. And Raleigh was a well-recognized and worldwide recognized poultry diagnostician. I found that extremely interesting. However, you know, when you dream of being a large animal veterinarian ever since the fourth grade, it's kind of hard to give it up for chickens. So first year out of college, I worked Northern Indiana in Amish area, did primarily large animal with some consultation on the side for small animal. I found out that my body wouldn't be able to stand that when I got to be retirement age. So switched to small animal, did that for about 4 years. It was not as challenging as agriculture is in a production animal. And so I missed ag. Went back to the university, got a PhD in veterinary pathology, and have specialized in poultry ever since. And I, although I had good times being a large animal and a small animal practitioner, I have enjoyed and do not feel bad about spending my career in poultry.
For over 40 years, Jeffo has been redefining animal nutrition with high-performance, non-medicated solutions. At the core is Jeffo Matrix technology, a disruptive approach that synchronizes nutrient release for precise delivery. Active in 65 countries, we develop cutting-edge formulas, essential oils, enzymes, and acidifiers to optimize health, performance, and reproduction. Jeffo is transforming animal feeding, making life easier for animals and people who care for them.
So in your career, you've overseen a poultry disease testing in a diagnostic lab. What are some of the most challenging situations that you face in that role?
Well, I mean, it varies in diagnostic labs about who has control of avian testing. In some cases, the avian person is the one who has complete control over that. In my case, it was actually different laboratories, the virology lab, bacteriology lab. They had their own methods and mechanisms, and I had to encourage them to see the approach from my side as a poultry diagnostician. So the other thing that often happens at diagnostic laboratories, especially with poultry, is there are new and emerging diseases that need diagnostic tests. And so I typically try to be before the curve that the disease hits to say, hey, this is coming. We need to get ready for it. Let's plan on it and let's start doing it. So that's typically been my role in terms of the diagnostic tests.
Mm-hmm. So there's challenges, but what do you find the most rewarding about it?
Working with farmers. You know, I tell you, as I used to say, a bad day in the field is better than a good day in the office. I love farmers. They're straight to the point. You don't have to play politics with them. You don't have to try to interpret them. They tell you what they're thinking. And so I appreciate that approach. And they're great people.
So in a diagnostic lab, you had relationships or had to navigate relationships between industry and state government and federal government. How did you approach that?
Yeah, you know, I saw my job as the primary response would be to be an independent person who did not have to answer to anyone in terms of trying to couch any of my thought processes. And I could actually speak what I was actually saying. That very commonly in the poultry industry, it's very easy to get poultry veterinarians to come to your farm from vaccine companies, genetic companies, drug companies. So they can those veterinarians would come to the farm, take a look at a problem. And unfortunately, they sometimes had a biased viewpoint because they often had to support a product. And so that was very difficult. And so I would be involved as the third disinterested party and can say, this is what I think is really going on. The same is true, I think, with trying to work with the state and federal government, letting them know at least what the scientific thought process is behind different diseases, how to control different diseases. I can speak without having to worry about politics. You know, how is it going to affect my job? And so that was the benefits and one of the things I found very rewarding.
You mentioned a bad day in the field is better than a good day in the office. So what was your approach to dealing with commercial poultry producers?
So typically it was more efficient for them to send their birds to me. I typically am a pathologist, so I do necropsies. I, you know, collect specimens, send them off to different laboratories, trying to figure out what the disease is. I take tissues for histopathology, look underneath the microscope to try to get a diagnosis. And so that's the most efficient way to do it. However, sometimes there are emergencies when they want me on the farm right away, or if there's something I couldn't answer from in the laboratory, I would get in a car and go out and visit their farm, take a look at the birds, walk the buildings, and try to make a better decision, a more complete decision in the disease process.
And did you find the producers were willing to listen to advice and take your words of wisdom?
Sorry, I laugh at that I tell veterinary students and especially new graduates, I found out very early on my job was to tell them what I was thinking. And since I didn't have any money in the game, their job was to figure out whether or not to decide to do what I say, what I think is appropriate. And so typically what I would do, tell them what I thought and then just walk away and not worry about the process. You know, if you're going to get your feelings hurt, you're not going to do anybody any good. So that's how I typically handled it.
You were also dealing with small flock owners or backyard producers. How was that different?
Well, you know, the small flock owners have all their birds named. And so, you know, I used to go to a farm once a month. They had approximately 2.5 million laying hens, and I would go through all of their flocks and try to determine if there are any disease problems, what's causing any death loss in their flocks, and then try to see whether or not I can help warn them that they're going to have problems in the future with production. And so it's totally different when someone sends me in one chicken, that Aunt Sadie that, you know, passed away and they're very concerned about it. The other thing I find very commonly, there's a lot of misconceptions and false understanding about raising poultry, especially in small flock situations. A lot of information is available on the internet. Unfortunately, some of it's not so good.
Do you find that's made it more of a challenge dealing with some of the information, if we can call it that, on the internet that might not be helpful?
Yes, that's typically true. And I think, I guess I viewed my job in general as to be an educator. You know, I had to educate the commercial farmers, and I also had to educate the small flock owners. And typically, small flock owners required a lot more of my time because their knowledge was very minimal. And many of the things, or not many, but quite a few of the things that they were having problems with was because they were mismanaging and didn't know what they were doing.
So in that regard, did you find them quite open to listen to what you had to say?
Typically, varied. Most of the people, yes, they appreciated what I had to say. Some of them had more knowledge than I did because they got it from the internet and they didn't want to agree with me. But luckily, in most cases, I was able to demonstrate them the real reason that their problem was. Typically what happens is somebody will send in a bird that's dead, and I do a necropsy and I find out the bird is emaciated. It hasn't been eating. It didn't have enough feed. And so then I asked them, have you been monitoring the weight of your flock? No, not really. I said, have you picked them up? If you picked them up, you'd find it was just bone and feathers. And they would say, I put feed out from them for all the time. They have free food. I don't know why they're not getting appropriate nutrients. And then I explained to them about sometimes you get a boss bird that keeps the birds away from the food and the water. And the other question is, are you noticing that they're eating the food? Some cases, their flock weren't eating the food that they put out.
So obviously, the internet is a source of a large amount of information. Are there any resources that you would recommend for small producers that has good information?
Yeah, I think that if you stick to information that's available from major universities, there's typically poultry science departments. The one University of Georgia has an excellent one, and they provide great information. So, you know, don't go by news groups or chat groups. Go investigate and find the answer to your question at a university. Those are always good sources of information.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends and family. You can also set notifications to on from our channel so you don't miss any upcoming episodes. And as always, please feel free to leave us your comments at any time. Your feedback is always valuable to us. So we may have covered this already a little bit, but what do you see as the poultry veterinarian's role at a land-grant university in the United States?
Well, again, I think in my thought process, and having been an extension veterinarian, it's to educate those people that have poultry, whether it's people that have two or three in their backyard and they're all named, or whether it's somebody that, again, has 2.5 million chickens that they're concerned about, or, you know, 30,000 turkeys. It's education. It's taking scientific information, translating it, provide it to the people who actually own and rear poultry.
That's your role at a land-grant university in the U.S. You have a lot of experience. Reading through your biography was fascinating. But you have a lot of experience in training poultry veterinarians on responding to catastrophic poultry diseases around the world. So how did you become involved in that?
Well, back, I believe, I'm trying to think of when it was, probably about 2008, 2007, somewhere around in there, the world was having a problem with the spread of Asian H5N1. The World Bank was willing to give money to countries if they developed an avian influenza national plan. Most countries would download the avian influenza plan from Australia, and they would just just insert their name where Australia was. So it was kind of like a rubber stamp so they could get their money. And I understand that process. But we had here at Michigan State University, we had a professor that was working with Rwanda. And they needed someone to evaluate their avian influenza program. So I was asked to go to Rwanda and evaluate that plan. Unfortunately, it was very cumbersome. It would have taken a long time for them to respond to it. So I was able to develop a different model using a lot of the information they already had, but streamline it, make it efficient and effective, and actually work with the people there to exercise that plan. Because of that, I got also invited to participate in a program called Stamping Out Pandemic Influenza. Stop AI is what it was. And that was a worldwide program. That was $36 million that the U.S. Agency for International Development had put together to help countries, especially developing countries, put together plans to stop, to recognize influenza, to be able to control it and recover from that. So in that process, I was one of the senior advisors in terms of developing programs and training people. And I went to many different countries, modifying the training programs, developing and putting on training programs. So I worked almost all over the world.
Yeah, I suppose that each location has its unique challenges. But in general, are there particular challenges in developing countries that that were a limiting factor in helping local veterinarians?
I think there was just a lack of knowledge about how to respond to that. And how to respond to it in a appropriate manner. In about every country that I visited, and this was a time when it was thought that the Asian H5N1 was going to infect humans and kill them. As a matter of fact, it had in multiple countries, but certainly not. It's a lot less than what it is today. But in every place that I went, the national veterinarian, the head of all the veterinarians in the country, had to actually go and visit the site. It was something that, this is just human nature. So they all felt they must go and see that. Well, the problem is every individual that's on one of those sites can actually carry that disease and spread it to their family or spread it to the next farm that they visit. And I found similar situations here in the United States. I exercised the state of Michigan about that very same thing. So it's human behavior. So it's educating them that, no, you have good people underneath you. You need to rely on them to be your hands and your eyes and report back to you and thus limit the number of people that actually go to that site.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it's also taking advantage of the skills and the resources that are available in that particular situation.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
So you've worked in Eastern Europe, you've worked in Africa, you've worked in Asia. Is there a particular place or country that you feel deeply connected to?
Almost all of them that I visited deeply, more deeply than others. I guess I'll give you my personal life, and that's Thailand. My wife is from Thailand.
Okay.
So I'm probably closer to that one. However, I did not visit that country.
Oh, okay.
So, I guess to think back of all the different countries, Macedonia was one of the better countries that I really enjoyed going to. And working with the people there, they were willing to listen to what I had to say, willing to practice what I was trying to teach them. It was a very fruitful activity.
Yeah, and in my experience, sometimes when you visit countries with limited technological resources, there's still a lot of very sharp people there that pay attention and really do a good job in spite of the limitations that they have.
And I, you know, I guess one of the more common things, especially in developing countries, you know, the professional people have a lot of head knowledge or book knowledge, but they don't often know how to translate that into action. And so that was one of the things I also tried to develop, was showing them how to take the knowledge they have and applying it in a field situation.
Yeah, and we talked earlier about how the internet maybe is not always the source of great information, but that is one one resource that even in developing countries, people can often access.
I agree. And one of the other thing I think is, you know, we live in such a small world every now compared to what we used to. About every 1 or 2 months, I get a question from a veterinarian in Vietnam about some flocks that he's dealing with. And I asked him, well, how did you get my name? He says, oh, I looked you up on the internet and I sent you a question and asked, you know, and thought I wanted to see whether or not you'd reply, and you did. And thank you for your help. So it's a small world now.
Yeah, it's great that you're able to have that influence around the world.
Yes, it is.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boehringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International. Creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Evonik. We are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. Boehringer Ingelheim develops poultry vaccines of unparalleled quality with a focus on prevention and control across a wide range of diseases. We deliver unique, sustainable solutions for broilers, layers, breeders, and turkeys. Our veterinary network brings unsurpassed knowledge and experience, helping producers make smart, innovative, science-driven decisions to improve bird health and performance. For more information, visit poultryhealthusa.com.
So just before we close, I've got a few hopefully interesting and fun questions. What's your favorite poultry-related book or resource?
Well, I think the best that you can get is probably Diseases of Poultry. That's the Bible for all of poultry diseases. I'm a member of the American Association of Avian Pathologists. They actually put a handbook out on poultry diseases. That's probably the best for those who don't really want to delve into all the specifics of diseases. So, you know, that one's available through the internet. I think you have to go to aaap.info and look on their books and look for the manual. And that's excellent. And it's somewhere around $80 approximately. So it's not very expensive. And it has color photographs.
Yeah. So for our audience, if you're interested, check it out. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
You know, since I'm in retirement, I think the one that I typically think about now is How to Retire Before Mom and Dad. So it's about investing wisely. You know, we academicians typically are so involved in our career that we don't think about what's going to happen when our career goes away and we need to survive on the money we have. And so that one right now is kind of my interest and trying to maintain the money that I was able to save.
Well, I wish you all the best in that.
Thank you.
Something we're all concerned about.
Yes.
And then finally, you've had such a varied career and really interesting experiences, but if you were advising a young person entering the animal health field, what would be your advice for success?
Well, the thing that I would recommend, first of all, and I tell my students this, make sure you follow your heart so that whatever you're going to do, it's not a job. And if you follow your heart, make sure there's a paycheck at the end of that trail. So many people will get, you know, a PhD in 17th century French literature. Well, good luck in the job with that. But if you're going to follow in my area, make sure you find a mentor, someone who you admire and look up to and would like to be like someday, and follow them. And most people are willing to share with younger people to help them prevent them having issues with roadblocks along the way.
Dr. Fulton, thank you so much for taking time with us today on the Poultry Podcast Show.
You're welcome. It's good to be here.
That concludes another episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Visit our website at wisenetics.com and learn more about all of our podcast segments, including poultry, swine, dairy, beef, feed mill, crops, and even pet food. I'm Doug Corver, and I'll see you next time on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.